Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Dawn B., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. Today's Tuesday, February 20th, 2024, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we're on page 4, the third paragraph, starting with, "We went to live with my wife's parents," through one paragraph ending, "An unwelcome hanger-on at brokerage places." We're going to be commenting on this one paragraph today. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Lorraine N., Vanessa G., readers of the text, Shelley E., Penny L. C., and Vanessa G. The reference number for Monday, February 19th, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 21,147. That's 21147. And for this morning, Tuesday, February 20th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 21,149. That's 21149. Our newcomer greeter this morning is Carla C., and Betsy H. will do the announcements. Thank you to everyone for providing service for this meeting. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, "Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers." At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I will now ask Lorraine N. to read the 12 steps of OA.
Thanks, Dawn. Good morning, everyone. Lorraine N., recovered compulsive eater in Oregon. Here are the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thanks for the opportunity to read the steps, and I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Lorraine N. And I'll now ask Vanessa G. to read the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous.
Hi, everyone. This is Vanessa G., recovered in New Mexico. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Thank you so much, Vanessa G. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share in what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book, and we're on page 4, the third paragraph. We went to live with my wife's parents, through one paragraph ending an unwelcome hanger-on at brokerage places. And we'll be commenting on this one paragraph today. I will now ask Shelley E. to begin reading and then share with us.
Good morning. Good morning, Dawn. Good morning, my fellows. I'm Shelley E., a recovered compulsive overeater in Arlington, Texas. The Big Book, page 4. We went to live with my wife's parents. I found a job, then lost it as a result of a brawl with a taxi driver. Mercifully, no one could guess that I was to have no real employment for 5 years or hardly draw a sober breath. My wife began to work at a department store, coming home exhausted to find me drunk. I became an unwelcome hanger-oner at brokerage places. Thank you for letting me do service. Shelley E. covered in Arlington, Texas. When I'm reading this with my sponsees, we always talk about how Bill begins his story. He's on and up, you know, up, 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 and then it's up and down. But the ups are still more than the downs. And here we begin to see more down than up. And I can definitely identify with that. Living high on the hog. I was, you know, living a great life. Everything was going wonderful. Although I was a compulsive overeater, I didn't recognize that. But it hadn't gotten the best of me yet. It hadn't manifested itself to the point where it finally did. And when it finally got me in its real grasp, it was all I could do to spend time with my family without thinking about food, without thinking about where I was going to get the next, or have the next binge. At the time, I didn't realize it. And it was because I realized finally that my focus was always on that I came into the rooms. I had weight to lose. But I realized I was spending time with my family, but never present because my concentration was always about me and centered within my disease. And so I think we're seeing this with Bill here. You know, what a jerk. He's, you know, he thinks he's so great that he doesn't really care that he's going to live with his wife's parents. I know I can identify that. I kind of felt like, I kind of deserve this. I didn't get into brawls with people, physical brawls, but I know that my tongue was not kind. I was a know-it-all. and you were going to know it by the time I left the room, you know, and you might as well just not question me. And I also, where it says no one could guess he was to have no employment for 5 years, no one realized the depth that I would go to. And thank God I didn't, but I did. The day did come where I looked around and thought, oh my gosh, who am I? I will say one last thing. When I entered the rooms, I could identify with everything except being selfish. And I thought to myself, you will never convince me that I am selfish. And by the time I finished this chapter, the number one thing I could identify with, besides being a compulsive overeater and spiritually sick, was that I was selfish. Everything I did, taking to neighbors, every time I stepped in and was going to save the day, it was selfish. It was control. And so the more I read about Bill, the more I identify with him and his journey. And I certainly realized that I had my share of his wife. I had my share of people that I left in my wake that I took advantage of. With that, I'll pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Shelley E., for getting us started. I'm now going to take the names of people who would like to share in this paragraph. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So who would like to share on this paragraph?
Barbara E. from New Jersey.
Barbara E.
Deb E. in Israel.
Deb E.
Tom L. from California.
Tom L. Okay, let's start with that lineup. I have Barbara E., Deb E., and Tom L. Barbara E., please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. Happy Tuesday to you. This is Barbara E., a volume compulsive overeater who will always be a volume compulsive overeater. But I don't have to die because of it. It's my choice. I don't know if you've ever heard the I don't know prayer, but it fits me so perfectly. I don't know what is happening. I don't know how to do this. I don't know what to do next. I don't know how to heal. I don't know how to handle it. I don't know how to fix it. I don't know how this is going to ever be okay again. And the last line says, but you know. But the thing was, I didn't. I didn't know that there was anyone who could fix this broken person, because I had tried everything, diet pills, shots, psychologists, and I have deep respect for them, but they didn't work for me. I tried everything but surgery. I have an aversion to cutting myself, but I couldn't get better. I would go on a diet for a wedding or of some kind of an occasion, lose over 100 pounds, and you know the end of the story. I'd gain it all back. And I always made myself promises. Tomorrow will be different. Tomorrow I'll get it. But it's no coincidence that the very first step mentions powerlessness. And that's what I didn't understand. An admission of personal powerlessness over food is the cornerstone of the foundation of recovery for me. I've learned that I don't have the power and control I once thought I had. I'm powerless over what people think about me. I'm powerless over having just missed the train. I'm powerless about what other people's opinions are of me. And I've learned it's really not my decision to worry about what they think of me. But I've also learned I'm not powerless over some things. I'm not powerless over my attitudes. And I'm not powerless over negativity. I'm not powerless over assuming responsibility for my own recovery. I have the power to exert a positive influence on myself, my loved ones, and the world in which I live. But I have to give myself that pause before I think, before I speak, and think, is it necessary? And is it necessary now? And am I saying it as kind as I should, and to remember Barbara. Everything I think I know, I probably don't, and be patient and accept my higher powers timetable. And thank you so much. Have a wonderful day, and thank you for your loving service. I pass.
Thank you so much, Barbara E. from New Jersey. Deb E., please share with us, followed by Tom L.
Thank you. Hi, this is Deb E., recovered compulsive overeater in Israel, and I'm really happy I got to hear the opening share because I really liked hearing all that stuff. I don't think I thought of any of that as I listened to the paragraph, so it was really nice to have like a different perspective from what was going on in my head. What I heard was, like, for me, the way I kind of insert myself into this paragraph and identify in is, you know, we went to live with my wife's parents, how that would have just taken me right into self-pity and had me stay there for a long time. Like, oh, poor me. Look what I have to do now. You know, I can't believe I got myself into this situation. Or no, I wouldn't even have thought it was had any responsibility in it. I would just thought, you know, things were just happening to me. And I didn't understand why, not seeing the connection between like my actions and the results. And then, you know, I found a job, then lost it as a result with a brawl of a taxi driver. And so, again, more self-pity and no awareness of, like, my part in anything. Just, like, everything's everybody else's balls. I, you know, no idea that I could have brought any of this on to myself. And, you know, no one could guess. If I just take those words, no one could guess. No one could guess. No one really guessed that I had an eating disorder. You know, if anyone was thinking about it, nobody said anything to me. Nobody could guess, like, all my secrets and all the stuff I was keeping from anybody. And I don't think I could guess, like, how much of an impact it had on me and the people around me. And this sentence really got to me. You know, my wife began to work in a department store, coming home exhausted to find me drunk. Like, she's putting all this effort in, she's trying to be the good wife and help, and he just, you know, he just stayed in the disease. And it just makes me think of how powerful the disease is, you know. And I want to always remember that because it's easy to forget it, being out of it. But to be able to, like, just kind of sit by, seemingly sit by and, like, watch other people do stuff for me and seemingly not care, you know, is a place that it took me to. Just, like, you know, I'm not having an impact on anybody other than myself. And because I don't care about myself, it doesn't matter. You know, that kind of thinking was very common for me at that time. And I think I'll pass with that. Thanks so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Deb E. from Israel. In case you're just joining us, we are on page 4, talking about the third paragraph that starts with, we went to live with my wife's parents, through one paragraph ending, an unwelcome hanger-on at brokerage places. So, Tom L., please share with us, and then I'll be taking some more names of people who would like to share.
Hey, good morning, Dawn. Good to be here with you. I'm glad you're here, too. I've said before, a couple of days ago, that, you know, I couldn't identify with Bill because he was a high flyer. He really impressed people. Not only was he smart, but he was capable, and he was impressive. I was smart. I thought I was capable, but I couldn't connect with other people ever since I was a kid. So that was always denied me. What I had, and what, of course, he had, was I had a substance that completely changed my point of view and my experience of the world. Here, you know, his life and my life begin to overlap. And the further he goes on, the lower he goes, I go, yes, this guy is me. I couldn't identify with the, you know, impressing people on Wall Street. Oh, give me a break. I was a fat nerd, you know, not impressive. But here, his generous friend had just let him go. He went to live with his wife's parents, who I guess were generous. I'm sure they weren't happy about that. I've moved in with my parents several times, you know, when I was an adult. I've depended on public assistance several times. Medical disability at one point. I was so lucky to get medical disability. I lived for like 3 years, didn't have to work, just could completely live on the internet, eating whatever I wanted. Had no idea I was an addict. And I don't think here Bill has the awareness, as someone mentioned, the disease hides itself very well. You know, he was just probably thinking, yeah, I'm down and out right now, but I'll find someone who can back me. And I have this track record where I really am impressive. And I'm sure this will work out, you know, and he is so far from being open to recovery at this point. Years. He is years from, he has a lot of getting beaten up, and so did I. This is not a minor disease that I have. It is all consuming, and it doesn't care if I'm successful or if I'm a recluse. It's not going to let me be comfortable. It's going to take away more and more until there are only two choices, the bitter end, which eventually he gets to and I got to, or asking for spiritual help, which is not really my first reaction. Anyway, I'm so glad to be here. This is what binds me to you, whether I'm social or not. This is where we can share. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Tom L. from California. And I'm now going to take the names of people who would like to share in this paragraph. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So who would like to share with us?
Margaret D., Georgia.
Margaret. Okay, Margaret D., Georgia. Press star 1 if you'd like to share.
Cheryl S., Nevada.
Cheryl S., Nevada.
Michelle F.
Michelle F. Who else would like to share? Press star 1.
Nancy L.
Penny L.
Nancy L. Penny L. C.
Robin A.
Robin A. Okay, let's go ahead with that lineup. I have Margaret D., Cheryl S., Michelle F., Nancy L., Penny L. C., and Robin A. Margaret D., please go ahead. Share
Thank
with
you.
Us.
Thank you. Good morning. Margaret D. in Georgia. And first off, a big, big welcome to the still suffering compulsive eater, whether you've been in the rooms 3 weeks or 45 years. The part that I can really identify with, and also even to this very moment helps alert me that I'm back in the disease, is the second sentence where he says he had gotten into a brawl, or he lost his job as a result of a brawl with a taxi driver. I'm kind of wondering, like, how can you lose your job because you got in a fight maybe with a bus driver? How would that possibly reflect back on your job? And so as I'm thinking about this, it's like, how many times have I gotten into fights with people, places, and things? Not necessarily, you know, gone out and punched somebody but in the nose, but that lingering resentment that goes on in my head, where somebody just doesn't act the way that I want them to act, or, you know, my expectations are so, well, they're just that, they're expectations, and they have nothing to do with reality. And then as a result of the unmanageability, from having these crazy expectations that sprang up from some God knows where, then I'm further resentful. And so I'm starting to have all these consequences that I can't figure out how in the world this consequence happened. How did getting in a fight with the taxi driver result in me losing my job? I just don't make this connection. How does holding a resentment towards a neighbor that moved 20 years ago, how does that impact my relationships with, my granddaughter's first grade teacher or whatever? And it's the craziness in my head that I can so identify with. And the fact that the consequences that happen, I just can't figure it out. And so instead of saying, gosh, do you think, Margaret, possibly, that my thinking is out of order, and I'm going to wrap it up with this, what I'm realizing now is just stop. Pause, Margaret. You are just out of control again. Even if it's only in your own head, and it's time to just stop and welcome your higher power back in, because you're back in the disease. And so thank goodness for 10 steps, and thank goodness for working with other people that helps me to see this, and thank goodness for my higher power in the fellowship. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Margaret D. from Georgia. Cheryl S., please share with us, followed by Michelle F.
Thank you. This is Cheryl S. in Nevada, recovered compulsive overeater just for today. And, with the last couple of people shared about, it sounds like Bill was really completely oblivious to the damage that he was causing, over this time period. And my first thought was, oh my gosh, there must have been some resentments brewing in that house. And then to consider that at 5 years, that it went on for 5 years. And I identify with that because, even though I have a different disease, I just wasn't present. And I thought that, I was a great partner, a great mom, a great daughter. And then I had this issue on the side of overeating. And my husband used to get frustrated, and every so often he would say, I'm so sick of doing everything. And I would think to myself, you don't do everything. Get over yourself. And I couldn't see it at the time, but through working the 12 steps and becoming recovered, I finally realized what kind of a true partner I was. And the fact was, I wasn't a true partner in any of my relationships. I wasn't able to be because I had something going on that kept me focused on myself, and that was the food. And I am so grateful for recovery because I can now be a partner. I can, I don't weigh and measure every action that I take. I weigh and measure my food, but my life is not a scale. Like, I'm not keeping score, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I just do my best to be there and to be a helpmate to my children, especially to my husband. And there are things that I can't do. We live on a couple of acres, and there are some physical things that I just can't do. And before, I would have just dismissed them. But now, I'll go out if my husband's out working in the pasture or something and say, can I be of help? Is there something I can do? And he'll say, yeah, get me these tools, or can you put this away, or drive the tractor here? And I can do those things. And I never would have considered it before. And I am so thankful that this program gave me the opportunity to be a partner, and also to make amends for those years that I wasn't a partner, and to try and get out of myself and to help others and help them see the reality of their lives, whatever that was, or that is. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Cheryl S. from Nevada. Michelle F., please share with us, followed by Nancy L., and let us know where you're calling from.
Hi, and thank you for your service. I'm calling from Massachusetts. I heard the words oblivious. I heard selfish. I heard not a good partner in the previous shares, and I say yes, yes, yes to all that. What really came back to me while listening to this paragraph was, you know, my husband commuted from the center of Massachusetts all the way into Boston a lot of years that I was eating, and he would come home exhausted, and, you know, I did the bare minimum. I had kids that learned how to feed themselves because I was in bed. I was really, really selfish, really selfish. If I wasn't in the food, I was sleeping it off. It certainly didn't help my mood, so I don't think I was much fun to be around. I wasn't present, so I wasn't really with my kids. And it was all about me, you know, that last one about the hangers-on at brokerage places. I had my first baby, and I worked in a medical office, and I thought I was the stuff, man. I brought my baby in as soon as I could, and at first everyone's like, oh, yay, a baby. And then after a while, I was a hangers-on, and they're like, we're busy. You know, why are you here? I didn't work for them anymore. But it was all about me, don't you know? And yeah, just the amount of selfishness that I had. And thinking about what this spiritual transformation is that now I have to think of other people besides myself. I didn't like myself when I was like this. So getting out of the food was not possible for me because I couldn't stand to live in my own skin, stark raving abstinent, being who I was. I just couldn't stand it. I was suicidal. And the food, I needed that just to be able to stand myself. So what this program does, it gets me out of my head. It gets me to think about other people besides myself. And the real spiritual transformation is that I live for being of service, having a purpose. I don't live solely for myself anymore, and it's less lonely, and it gives me a sense of direction, and I like myself better. You know, I still have my battles, as we all do, but the food isn't the answer. The answer is getting out of myself and relying on a power greater than myself and seeing what I can do to help other people, because that's what feels good. That makes me feel like I am a worthwhile human being. I guess that's all I had to share. Thank you. I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Michelle F. from Massachusetts. Nancy L., please share with us, followed by Penny L.C.
Oh, thanks so much. This is Nancy. Back quite a few years.
Nancy, you're kind of cutting out, so we're not hearing all that you're saying.
I'll try it again. This reading reminds me of when I went to a sporting event about 20 years ago, and I was standing next to someone who I thought I knew. I wasn't sure I knew him, but the more I looked at him, the more I realized he was my old eating and drinking buddy from many years ago. And he looked like a loser, and that he was one of those kind of hanger-oners, because we did the sport together. And so there he was, but he wasn't doing the sport. He was just standing there, and I my heart just broke for him. I just couldn't understand it. I mean, because after all, you know, I was at the top of my life. I had gotten married. I finally had a baby girl. We owned a home on acreage. I was just at the top. But what I didn't realize was I still had the disease, but circumstances were making things look pretty good for me. And I thought, this was it. This was it. So I talked to him for a few minutes and then left. But, oh, man, my heart just broke for him. He looked like he was definitely on his last leg with the alcohol, et cetera, et cetera. But later on, I realized this disease didn't go anywhere. It was just in the back fence, whatever, doing the push-ups, because 20 years further on, after seeing this young man, almost like, I don't even think he was 40, almost ready to kick the bucket, I was pushing 220 pounds at 5'4", absolute despair of what the heck was going on. But I had this disease all along, and it was really starting to take me out. I'm so, so grateful for OA, the 12 steps, and that I'm living a recovered life today, but not a peaceful life, because I am pumped every day to keep passing on what's been so freely given to me. And I owe it all to my higher power and you guys. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Nancy L. Penny LC, please share with us, followed by Robin A. And just a quick reminder, we're talking about page 4, the third paragraph. We went to live with my wife's parents through that one paragraph ending an unwelcome hanger-on at brokerage places. So Penny LC, please share, followed by Robin A., and then I'll take a couple more names.
Good morning, Dawn, and good morning to everyone on the line. Dawn, thank you for your service. This is Penny LC, a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from the state of Washington. And wow, I can definitely see Bill's disease progressing. You know, just like I was, he was living to drink, I was living to eat as my disease progressed. And I can relate to the the immaturity. Oh my gosh, you know, to just be not taking, being not accountable for his situation. And I can remember not being accountable for mine. Impetuous, you know, doing what I darn well wanted to when I wanted to. Impulsive, same thing. For the moment, I might go off and do something, even if it, you know, it made no sense. But it was just ego, self-focus. You know, I wanted what I wanted, and I wanted it now. There was very little consideration for those around me. You know, basically, I was just drenched in self-delusion. You know, as Bill was hanging on to his glory days, I'm just sure that he could repeat them. Similarly, I can remember a vivid example from high school when I was still getting away with my compulsive overeating and my physical appearance was still attractive. But then going off to college and gaining 40 pounds deluding myself, you know, that I was still somehow physically appealing as I once was, in terms of, you know, if I just wear enough makeup or have the right clothes, it'll work, you know. And I don't know, it's amazing how much we can just fool ourselves. I know I fooled myself for a long time with just my personality was just noxious at some point, and yet I kept thinking about how everybody else was wrong or everybody else was the problem. Being able to see my truth today, being able to have worked the step work and seeing all of my dysfunctional behavior, being able to live a different life today, live a recovered life based on this principles, this program, is just an amazing experience that I'm grateful to have. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Penny LC from Washington. Robin A., please share with us and let us know where you're calling from.
Hi, good morning. This is Robin from Los Angeles. Thanks for all the shares, and thank you so much for the reading. It is so eye-opening and hopeful to hear this. I'm newly back in the program and just admitting to myself the level of on recovery that I've had, even though I've been sober in other programs for many years, the dysfunction and just the disability of how my eating has affected my life. And just in the 4 days that I'm back, like, I've gotten more done than I have probably in 2 months, just organizing and cleaning my car just to, just not eat and get recovery and get sober. And I have just been in such pain with food for so many years, and it's like just everybody's sharing about the level of dishonesty and selfishness and how I was in my marriage and just the level of things, the inability to properly deal with life and life as it comes is so overwhelming when it is me and food and alone in that disease. And I'm so freshly new that it's so fragile to me, but last night I gave up going to a place that I knew in a week that I would probably slip again. And I'm just not putting, just for today, anything between me and my sobriety in this program. And it's like God's doing for me right now what I can't do for myself. And I'm so taking it a minute at a time and just want this so bad. I just want this level of clarity and awareness and accountability that I hear that people have. And I just feel like it could be heaven on earth, you know? I just feel like I could imagine what it could be like if I didn't have this last substance that just takes me out of my life. And so I'm not yet, and this is what I did 26 years ago when I first got sober in another program, I just didn't run around telling everybody again. So I'm just keeping it between me and people in this program and my sponsor because it just feels so fragile right now. So if you have some extra prayers, just send them my way. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Robin A. from California, and we're so grateful to have you on the line with us. I am now going to take a couple names of people who would like to share on this paragraph. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So I'll take a couple names of people who would like to share.
Stephanie S.
Stephanie S. Who else would like to share?
Kathleen W.
I heard Kathleen
W.
Kathleen W. And I heard another name there, and please come back tomorrow. We would love to hear from you as well. Stephanie S., please go ahead, followed by Kathleen. And if you'd take just two-minute shares, that would be wonderful. Thank you. Go ahead, Stephanie. Star one. Star one, Stephanie? Okay, maybe she had to step away. We'll go with Kathleen W., and then we'll come back to Stephanie.
Hi, I have no problem unmuting. I'm Kathleen W. from Illinois. Boy, did I need to hear this today. Thank you so much for your service. And also for all of the people who shared today, oh, my heavens, looking at this paragraph from the light of what kind of a partner was he? And I had, you know, it's made me think about more, just as I'm listening, and I have been thinking about this, what kind of partner am I? I've been looking more closely at it. It seems like my vision is clearing. You know, I'm getting some clarity about, you know, whatever problems come up between my husband and I, how do I contribute to them? I'm looking more clearly at my contribution. you know, the impulsivity that I've, you know, is part of my personality. I want what I want when I want it. And I'm just so grateful because I would not be aware of these behaviors now. I'm looking at them with new clarity, looking to find out what needs to change in me so that we can have the harmony I desire. If I was still in the food, I would, and not in the steps, I would be not even thinking about this. I would be blaming my husband and focusing on his character defects. And thank God for this program. Thank God for, you know, what God is doing for me as I am growing along spiritual lines and doing that within the presence and support of this fellowship. So with that, I'll pass. Thanks a lot.
Oh, thank you so much, Kathleen W. from Illinois. Is Stephanie S., are you back on the line? Stephanie?
I am. Can you hear me now?
Sure. Go ahead and share with us.
Yeah, so my name is Stephanie S. I'm from Washington State. And, I'm thinking about the marriage relationship. When it hit a low point before I found out about OA, my husband, who says he's a codependent, which I've been in denial about, he found in the trash some evidence that I was in my addiction, which he already knew, but he brought it to my attention, and I said, well, what else do I have to live for other than those food items? I have nothing else to live for. And that's when I decided, or at least the veil came off. I knew I needed help. And so fortunately I found you guys in May, and I'm starting and I'm enjoying it, but it's been tough, but there's a lot of freedom too. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Stephanie S. from Washington. And thank you to everyone who shared. We actually do have about a minute share if somebody else would like to take a 1 minute share that hasn't shared in the last few days. Otherwise, we'll go ahead and end the meeting.
Okay. Hi, this is Deb F.
Okay, Deb, go ahead. Take about a 45-second share, if you would.
Okay, thank you. I just have been appreciating all the shares, and I can relate to what kind of a partner am I, what kind of a sibling am I, what kind of a daughter, what kind of a, you know, friend, you know, and look at that, because before all of this, I would look at, the faults of others, you know, and then that was magnified. Now I get to look at, okay, what's my part? And there's a tremendous freedom in looking at my part. That's all I could say. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Deb F., and for everyone who shared today. And we'll now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Penny L.C. please read a vision for you? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Yes, thank you, John. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.